This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It was about 8 years ago, and I received a call from the pastor of a very large Russian and Ukrainian church in the Northeast. He said to me, "Chuck, I really would like for you to come and speak to our congregation. We're very concerned about what's happening in America. We're very concerned about what's happening to our children and our grandchildren. Would you please come and speak? I think they can listen to you. Because of the way you talk on the air and the way you have a background as a lawyer and so on, I think they will listen to you." What was he talking about? He was talking about the fact that his constituency, that is, those in his congregation, had come over from Russia and from Ukraine and some from Poland. They had all experienced communism. They had all experienced the horrific shutdown of spirituality and so on under the aegis of the Bolshevik Revolution that had happened 70 years earlier, and had come to America to flee in the hope of having religious freedom and being able to raise their children and their grandchildren in the nurture and admonition of the Lord in freedom. But now they were experiencing something radical. They were experiencing seeing the very things that they had fled happening in the so-called land of the free that was increasingly becoming only the home of the brave. That land was America. And so over the past 8 years, I have been requested not just once, but numerous times to speak in that congregation. Have also spent time talking with their young people, because they're being absorbed into a culture that is deceptively sweeping them into the very deceptions that their parents and grandparents sought to flee. Today on Viewpoint, we're going to get some insight into this problem. Our special guest, Ron Dreyer, has a fantastic book, Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. Now, you may not like the word dissident. How about a manual for genuine followers of Jesus Christ in a world such as ours? Today on Viewpoint, he is going to be joining us in just a moment. But he asked the question in the introduction to his book, what is happening here? A progressive and profoundly anti-Christian militancy is steadily overtaking society right here in America. One described by Pope Benedict XVI as a worldwide dictatorship of seemingly humanistic ideologies that pushes dissenters to social margins. Now, I'm sure to listen very carefully to what Pope Benedict said. He called this a manifestation of the spiritual power of the Antichrist. The spiritual power of the Antichrist. Now, those of you who have been listening to this program long know that my most recent book is called Antichrist, How to Identify the Coming Imposter. The problem is that most Christians not only don't know how to identify such an imposter, they don't even care. They just don't even care. They think it's irrelevant because they have already been absorbed into that mind and heart set. Our guest today says this is empowered by unprecedented technological capabilities to surveil private life, that there's virtually nowhere left to hide. He said the old hard totalitarianism had a vision for the world that required the eradication of Christianity. The new soft totalitarianism does too, and we're not equipped to resist its sneakier attack. Today we talk about soft totalitarianism. What does it look like? Are we in it? Where is it headed? And what should we do in response? Our special guest, Rod Dreyer, with his absolutely fantastic book. Rod, it's so good to have you on the program from down there in Louisiana.
It's great to be here. These are such difficult times, and it's so important that Christians confront these problems straight on.
Well, it's interesting. I'm coming to you with a background in the broader evangelical Christian world. My father was a pastor for 50 years, and from coast to coast, I have been in 10 different denominations. I currently don't identify myself as denominationally oriented, but as a true follower of Jesus Christ. And you are coming from a completely different background. Explain it.
That's right. I was a Roman Catholic for many years, very devout, and then I lost my ability to believe as a Catholic when I was a journalist in the early 2000s writing about the abuse scandal. But Christ in his mercy did not let me go, and I ended up in the Eastern Orthodox Church and have been an Orthodox Christian for the past 14 years. But I tell you, the work I've been doing with my books and my journalism has brought me into contact with all kinds of true believers. And I see my work as something that tries to speak to all people who truly follow Christ, whatever your denomination.
Absolutely. So today, this is a very unusual melding of our backgrounds, and God can use all of us in these different backgrounds. You're a true follower of Jesus Christ. And explain a little bit about Eastern Orthodox. That might be a little confusing. We've heard of Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox. What brand of Orthodox are you?
I'm part of the Orthodox Church in America, which descended from the Russian Orthodox Church. Most people have heard, as you say, of Russian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox. We're all part of the same church. It's just national expressions of the same unified church. We are, well, we like to say we're the oldest church around, that the Catholics left us in the year 1054. There was a great schism between East and West.
Right.
The Catholics say we left them. But in any case, the Orthodox worship has gone on without stopping in the East. And the Orthodox, in fact, in the Soviet Union, suffered one of the worst persecutions in the history of Christianity under the Bolsheviks.
Absolutely. What do you make of the fact that Vladimir Putin has entered into a rather amazing amalgamation with the metropolitan, the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church now? It's almost like the ultimate merger of church and state.
Well, that is long in the Byzantine tradition, I'm afraid, and you know, the symphony, as they call it, between church and state. Mm-hmm. As an American Christian and as an Orthodox Christian, that concerns me very much, because I, not so much because I'm worried about the state being unduly influenced by the church, but rather the opposite. So I'm grateful to God to see the rebirth of Christianity in Russia after the Bolshevik yoke. But I'm also very worried, too, that the church would get too caught up in political power and forget that its primary mission here on earth is to bring salvation, to proclaim the good news and lead people and disciple people into being followers of Christ.
Well, you say in your book, we cannot hope to resist the coming soft totalitarianism if we do not have our spiritual lives in order. That was the message of Alexander Solzhenitsyn back in the 1970s. He said the core of the crisis is not political, but spiritual. We've been saying that over and over and over again, including yesterday right here on this program. Today, friends, we are going to probe deeply. You don't want to miss today's program. We'll be right back. Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. Decades ago, Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote that famous book, Gulag Archipelago, and it exposed the rottenness of Soviet totalitarianism, and it made Solzhenitsyn a global hero. He actually was like a global saint. And he said this, The foundation of totalitarianism is an ideology made of lies. Our way must be never knowingly support lies. You may not have the strength to stand up in public and say what you really believe, but you can at least refuse to affirm what you do not believe. So what does it mean to never knowingly support lies? And how is it that lies could be at the very heart of soft totalitarianism that is now taking over the United States of America and all of the West? Our special guest today to help us with that conversation, Rod Dreher, with his book, Live Not by Lies. It's a manual for Christian dissidents. In other words, for Christians who want to live faithfully according to the gospel of Jesus Christ and not be absorbed by the spirit of Antichrist that is sweeping the world. It is a $27 book, and friends, my producer tells me I'm to offer it for $17 here on the program today. It's a hardbound book. It's just recently came out, just a few months ago, and you don't want to miss this book. I'm telling you, you don't want to miss this book. $17, we'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $5 for postage and handling. Don't miss out on this one. Rod, when we go back to Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he says, we must never knowingly support lies. What does that have to do with what you call soft totalitarianism?
Well, in this culture we're living in today, it means, one thing it means is supporting gender ideology.
Okay.
I heard, and I think I can say this without violating any confidences, I heard from a friend who works for a major American corporation who texted me from inside a big corporate meeting where all the employees were told that if you don't get along and go along with this journey of inclusion on LGBT, then there's no place for you here at the company. This man said, I know as a Christian, I'm going to have to resign. That's the end of my career. But this is a man who is willing to sacrifice his career rather than appear to go along with something he knows is false.
Well, the question is, how long can this go on? He's just one of many. I have heard reports of many. We've all experienced some of these things in the news media. We hear of professors that are being not just persecuted, but driven out of universities and colleges, even out of Christian universities and colleges, because they refuse to buy into the lies. This can go on only so long until ultimately the culture is completely enveloped and totalitarianism taken over.
That's absolutely true. And it's not just on sexuality. We have critical race theory, which is taking over many conservative churches and seminaries, I'm told.
Well, the Southern Baptist Convention and Presbyterian Church in the USA, we did a program on it just a month ago. They're having virtual wars, internecine wars, over this issue.
Yeah, and you know, the reason this is so slippery for us Christians is so much of what calls itself social justice is a perversion of Christianity. Christianity teaches that we're supposed to be on the side of the weak and stand up for the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
But what the liars of the social justice movement do is pervert that and say, we're going to be more Christian than the Christians. And this fellow Rene Girard, a great 20th century intellectual I quote in my book, he said that this is how the Antichrist is going to come. He's going to deceive us not by opposing Christianity outright, but rather by perverting it.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is exactly how Satan works. He is the consummate deceiver. In fact, that's one of his names. And the Bible says in the book of Daniel, one of the ways of identifying the coming imposter, the Antichrist, is that by the pursuit of peace, he will destroy many. So in the name of peace, he's going to destroy those who he claims are enemies of his peace, i.e., those who refuse to embrace his lies.
That's exactly right. And you notice how the social justice warriors always talk about that they have to suppress Christians and other so-called bigots for the sake of safety and health and peace and harmony. But we can't allow ourselves to be deceived. But if we, if we're the sort of Christians who have been very comfortable for so long in this country, in this wealthy country, this country where we've had religious liberty, that we think it can't happen here, we have a rude awakening.
Well, we already are under a somewhat of a rude awakening. The problem is that most professing Christians and their pastors are virtually asleep. They're sleepwalking, and therefore they don't have sufficient consciousness of the real drama that is taking place right in front of them.
That's really true, Chuck. And you know, one thing I heard when I traveled throughout Russia and the former communist countries of Eastern Europe, talking to people, Protestants, Orthodox, Catholics, who had suffered under communism for their faith, the one consistent thing they all tell me is that American Christians do not know how to suffer for their faith. And if we don't know how to suffer, we're not going to make it.
Isn't that interesting? Because the Apostle Peter, one of the premier characteristics of his two epistles are the subject of suffering. And he says, we are going to have to learn and be willing to suffer for the Lord's sake. But that whole concept doesn't compute today in America or the Western world, does it?
No, it really doesn't. We are victims of our prosperity and our liberty. I mean, the Lord has blessed us with wealth. He's blessed us with freedom, but we have not used it well. And my real fear, and this is the fear expressed to me for the American church by our brothers and sisters in the former communist world, is that we'll be so afraid of losing our status, of losing our wealth, losing our privileges, that we will agree to anything.
How about losing our retirements?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Pastors, my wife and I actually had a pastor, a beloved man. He was revered and loved the Lord. But one day he told us that there were certain things that he couldn't teach or preach in the Bible that he believed. And here's what he said: I can't do it because the people won't receive it and I'll lose my retirement.
Well, so he agreed to live by a lie. But here's the thing that we and the rest of the church can do for pastors like that. We have an obligation to make it easier for them to speak the truth. If that pastor knew that if he spoke the truth, that there would be laymen and laywomen out there who would support him and stand by him and not let him and his family fall through the net, then maybe he would find the courage to do the right thing.
Mm. You know, the famous philosopher Gady once said, courage lost, all lost. And the reality is that courage is in very short supply in this country, particularly at the spiritual end of things.
That's true. And, you know, Solzhenitsyn gave the Harvard commencement address in 1978. Mm-hmm. He had been expelled from the Soviet Union in 1974. He was received in the West as a hero. And the people at Harvard gathered there expecting him to come deliver to them a speech in praise of the West. He didn't do that. He stood there and he said, I'm glad to be here, but I have to tell you, you all are losing courage. You know, I've come away from a tyranny, but I've come into a world that has lost its spirituality, it has lost its God, and it has lost its courage.
Well, he got no praise for that word.
No, indeed. But it was true. Mm. And, Solzhenitsyn had seen the worst of what the 20th century had to offer. He saw right through the lies of communism. But you know, Chuck, in his book, The Gulag Archipelago, he wrote, bless you, prison. Bless you, prison. Why did he bless prison? Because prison brought him out of the deception he was living in, the godless deception he was living in when they threw him in prison.
Mm.
It brought him to the Lord, and he was thankful for that suffering.
Isn't it interesting? He said that the core of this crisis of totalitarianism is not political, but spiritual. And yet, we're being told that the battle is political, that it's all about, political shenanigans and all of those efforts, but yesterday, our program right here on the program, right here on Viewpoint, was that the pursuit of globalism, which is the foundation for the coming totalitarianism, is a spiritually driven enterprise. And both Republican and Democrat have sold their souls to it.
You know, I can believe that easily. The Great Reset, I don't know if you talked about that.
Yes, just last week.
Yep. And this is something that the globalists are taking advantage of the COVID crisis to push. They want to reform world institutions and world governments in order to bring peace to the world, just as you said. The thing that scares me the most about the Great Reset is part of it is they want to make the whole globe cashless. So we'll all do our buying and selling electronically, digitally, not using actual cash. They do this in China, and this is a way to make sure that no one can participate in the economy unless they have the approval of the government.
Isn't that what Revelation chapter 13 and 14 is all about, the mark of the beast?
Exactly. And, you know, I tell you, I'm a conservative politically and theologically, but I get really frustrated with some of my Christian conservative friends who think that the only thing we have to do is get back into political power and all will be well.
Yeah.
The last 4 years have seen an acceleration, a quickening of apostasy in this country, even though we had a Republican president and a Republican Senate. I think it's important to be involved in politics, to fight for religious liberty, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But if we think the fight that we're facing, the main fight, is political, we're dreaming.
Absolutely. So you asked this provocative question, and we haven't even left the introduction of your book yet, because this sets the stage, and you've already agreed at my request to do a number of different interviews over the next several months concerning this, because it is so such a serious issue. But you ask the question, what does it mean for us today to live not by lies? Alexander Solzhenitsyn says, never knowingly support lies. And yet today we have embraced a kind of thinking, even in our churches, you go along to get along, and that's the loving thing to do. Even if it means that you're not embracing the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, you're just going to be absorbed into the new amalgamation of Christ and culture.
Well, that's it right there. And you know, it's so complicated today because, as a Slovak priest told me, he said, back during communism, the light of the gospel shone a clear path through the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But today, when the gospel shines out onto this world, it hits fog, because it's so difficult to know when we should be compassionate and when compassion means having to be hard,
to stand up
and hurt people's feelings. And that is something certainly here in the Deep South where I live. You know, we're all taught to be respectful and polite, but that politeness is causing the church to collapse in many
ways. Absolutely. In fact, dare I say, and I've said it many times, but I'll say it again since you brought it up, the most difficult place in the country for us to take this program over the past 25 years has been the Bible Belt. It's been the most resistant of any place in the country. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. But
They've received an inoculation, just enough of the Bible, just enough churchianity to feel good.
You know, that's so true. A friend of mine at my church took Live Not by Lies to his Bible study, when most of the people in his Bible study are evangelicals,
mm-hmm.
age 55 and older, and he was trying to tell them about what we need to wake up to prepare for as Christians, and they said, oh, no, it's not going to be a big deal. If we just reelect President Trump, everything's going to be fine. And my friend is a Trump voter, but he said, look, you know, reelecting President Trump is only going to be part of it. But they just couldn't imagine what was happening. And my mom is the same way. She's 77 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The moral collapse and religious collapse she has seen in her life is mind-boggling. And she can't bring herself to accept that things are as fragile as they really are.
But well, they are indeed. And that's why we need to talk about this substantially and seriously. Live Not by Lies, A Manual for Christian Dissidents. Friends, it's a $27 book. hardbound, yours for $17 right here on the program. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Why is religion and the hope it gives at the core of effective resistance to soft totalitarianism? Why does the willingness to suffer have to do with living in truth? Why is the family the most important cell of opposition? How does faithful fellowship provide resilience in the face of persecution? And how can we learn to recognize totalitarianism's false messaging and fight its deceit? Those are profound questions that we attempt to answer here in the second half of the program on Viewpoint Today. Our viewpoint does determine destiny. There are no neutral viewpoints, friends. And what we're doing today, we are facilitating the message of a true Christian journalist. This is not political journalism. This is Christian journalism that has political overtones and impact. And there's a difference, a radical difference, and it has to do with viewpoint. A Soviet-born immigrant who teaches in a university deep in the U.S. heartland stresses the urgency of Americans taking people like her seriously. She said, "You will not be able to predict what will be held against you tomorrow. You have no idea what completely normal thing you do today or say today as a Christian will be used against you to destroy you." This is what people in the Soviet Union saw. People will have to live through it firsthand to understand, she said. "Anytime I try to explain current events and their meaning to my friends or acquaintances," she said, "I am met with blank stares or downright nonsense." And that's the way it is today. And friends, that's why for 25 and a half years since forming Save America Ministries, God calling me to lead the practice of law at the height of my career to plead his cause in the land as a voice to the church, declaring vision for the nation, it has been like paddling a canoe straight up Niagara Falls. From pulpit to pew, the resistance is great. And yet our guest today, Rod Dreher, says, no, there's a different kind of resistance. It is genuine Christian resistance to the encroaching soft totalitarianism that is ushering in the spirit of Antichrist. Do I have that correct, Rod?
You do, Chuck. And I have to say that maybe it's important for your listeners to understand the difference between hard totalitarianism and soft totalitarianism.
Yes, let's explore that. Go ahead.
Yeah, hard totalitarianism is what we all think about when we think of totalitarianism. Mm-hmm. We think about George Orwell's 1984. We think about the Soviet Union with the gulags and the prisons and the secret police. I don't think that's what's coming here. And I think the fact that that is not on the immediate horizon is one reason that so many of us Americans can't take these refugees from communism seriously. But rather, the soft version of this is going to come not from the state inflicting pain and terror on the people, but rather through agents, not only the state, mostly major corporations, universities, the media, things like that.
Google, Twitter, Facebook, yes, and all of those monumental agencies, not to mention Amazon.
Absolutely. And it's going to be them manipulating our sense of status, our comforts and our pleasures to get us to conform. And so you have a situation like in China, where they have the social credit system. That's a system whereby the Chinese government takes all the data it can gather from smartphone use, computer use, and so forth. They run it through algorithms and assign to each Chinese citizen a social credit profile. Now, if you get a high social credit score, which you do by doing things the government approves of, like downloading the speeches of Xi Jinping, then you have all kinds of privileges, shopping privileges, travel privileges. You can get the best jobs. Your kids can go to the best universities. But if you do things the government disapproves of, like going to church, and they can tell that you're going to church because they track your GPS,
right?
Then you get a lower score. And the lower your score, the less you can participate in the economy. They even have the power to cut you out completely from the economy because China is a mostly cashless society. Now, Chuck, we have in this country the same capabilities for gathering that data, and our major companies do it all the time, and they do this legally. There's nothing illegal about harvesting the data.
Well, they're actually playing the same game with China.
Exactly, exactly.
They're bowing and scraping to the very spirit of China.
Yes, exactly. And I think that it's only a matter of willpower on the part of these major corporations that they haven't started singling out people who are deplorable in their eyes, conservative Christians, political conservatives, and others, and refusing to do business with us. That's already starting to happen in Great Britain, where banks are turning down the business of and won't even let people they consider to be deplorable have accounts.
Now, speaking of deplorable, that is a word that was made famous by Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is a consummate globalist, together with her husband, and it is she that these corporations, major corporations, and the globalists within the Republican and Democratic Party were trusting to lead them into the explosion of this new soft totalitarianism throughout the world.
Exactly, exactly. What they'll be able to do is use the algorithms and all this data that all of us generate simply by virtue of the fact that we participate in the modern world. They'll be able to identify who the quote-unquote bad people are and punish us. It's really frightening when you think about it. I remember, and I write about this in the book, I was sitting in the apartment in Prague of a woman, Kamila Bendova. She's an old woman now, but she and her family were leading dissidents. Her late husband went to prison for his Christian faith and fighting communism. But she said to me, "I don't understand, Rod, why so many Americans and young people today, even in her country, are so naive about sharing their information." She said, "Nobody collects this information for innocent reasons. Sooner or later, it will be used against you."
Wow. And yet that's the spirit of the age. Provide more information. We're being seduced. Here's what you can have if you just give me this information. And pretty soon, the information overtakes you. You can run, but you can't hide. And pretty soon, you are under the thumb, the persecuting thumb of the controllers.
This is true. And the fact that this is being done primarily at this stage, not by our government, but by major corporations, is one of the things that fools so many of us Americans. You know, I'm old enough, Chuck, to remember the Cold War and remember how back then with people like me who were formed in the Reagan years, business was considered opposite to the government. And the state, the Leviathan state was considered our enemy. And business was, if anything, they were heroes. That's totally changed.
Yet we now find and hear today that Jeff Zuckerberg has financed much of the election fraud with $300+ million from his legally protected business.
That's right. And you cannot possibly overstate the power of these corporations, which have moved profoundly to the left. You know, the thing that got this entire book project, Live Not By Lies, started, Chuck, was when I got a phone call in 2015 from a physician in Minnesota who said, we had a mutual friend, and he said, "I have to tell somebody this. My elderly mother is from Czechoslovakia. She spent 4 years in prison as a young woman for practicing her faith. She came to this country, met my dad, they got married, and so on. She's very old now and lives with me and my wife, and she said, son, the things I'm seeing happen in this country remind me of what happened when communism first came. Well, the thing that prompted that, Chuck, was she had been watching the controversy in Indiana back that spring, 2015, mm-hmm. when the state passed a state version of the Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act to give religious people an affirmative defense in court if they were sued for discrimination. Suddenly, all the big companies, Apple, Salesforce, these national companies doing business in Indiana, said this is bigoted, and if you don't repeal this law, there will be economic consequences. And the state did repeal the law. At that same time, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a little evangelical-owned pizza parlor called Memories Pizza in
Oh, yes.
Right.
Pizzagate. Okay.
Right. A TV reporter went there and asked them, the owners, the evangelical owners, would you serve a gay customer? Of course. Would you cater a gay wedding? Well, no, that's against our religion. Boom. That became a national story. That family had to shut their pizza parlor down because a flash mob came up threatening to kill them and burn their business down.
Mm-hmm.
That is what triggered this Czech woman, because she told her son, this is what they did under communism. If they thought you were a threat to the ruling ideology, they can manufacture a mob to threaten to kill you and burn your business down.
Well, that's exactly what happened to the cake baker up there in, Seattle?
Colorado.
And then also in Colorado.
That's right. And we've seen this sort of thing happen more and more since 2015. But the important thing about what happened in Indiana was this was the first time major corporations took sides so clearly in the culture war. And it was like the U.S. getting involved in the Second World War. The Japanese and the Germans lost the day America got involved because we brought such firepower to it. In the same way, Christians and moral traditionalists lost the culture war when big business got involved so heavily to suppress religious liberty legislation in Indiana.
Mm. Of course, the question is, how does this slide in under the radar of our minds and our hearts as Christians, our Christian leaders, pastors, and so on? Because it has. It has come right in, and we say, well, there's nothing we can do about that. That's just an isolated thing. But the reality is it's not just isolated, and it's multiplying like rabbits. Today's totalitarianism, you say, demands allegiance to a set of progressive beliefs, many of which are incompatible with logic and certainly with Christianity. Compliance is forced less by the state than by elites who form public opinion and by private corporations that, thanks to technology, control our lives far more than we would like to admit. It's possible to miss the onslaught of totalitarianism precisely because we have a misunderstanding of how its power works. That's what we want to look at in this next segment, friends. It has to do with something, well, you probably won't believe it. But you better believe it, because it's happening right in front of our eyes. This is Viewpoint.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
We're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour right here on Viewpoint, including today. For 25 and a half years, we've been doing just that. There are those who have been listening, Their lives have been changing. Their hearts and their eyes are being opened, and they're so grateful. And we hear the words, the emails, the letters that are coming from many of you. On the other hand, right now, as things stand, they're few and far between, comparatively speaking. Why is that? Well, maybe you can get an understanding from this. A totalitarian state seeks not just to control your actions, but also your thoughts and emotions. Your thoughts and your emotions. How does it work? Well, at the turn of the 21st century, the cultural critic René Girard prophetically warned these words: "The current process of spiritual demagoguery and rhetorical overkill has transformed the concern for victims into a totalitarian command and a permanent inquisition." This is what the survivors of communism are saying to us. Liberalism's admirable care for the weak and marginalized is fast turning into a monstrous ideology that, if not stopped, will transform liberal democracy into a softer, therapeutic form of totalitarianism. Now, that may sound a bit strange, friends. It might be a little bit difficult to grasp, so we're going to spend the next 10 minutes or so attempting to untie its meaning, exposing what is meant by this therapeutic form of totalitarianism. I hope you'll listen, because this is exactly where we are right now, and it explains an awful lot of what's happening in our culture. Our special guest today, Rod Dreher, with his book, Live Not by Lies. It's a manual for Christian dissidents. Rod, tell us what this means, this therapeutic form of totalitarianism.
Well, by therapeutic, I mean it's a mentality and an approach that tries to soothe us, to tell us that this will make you better if you just go along with it. Mm-hmm. A good example, it's in the book. It was from a young Hungarian woman. She's a young wife with a toddler. She was my translator in Budapest. Mm. And she told me that she can't understand why it is that whenever she goes to her friends to try to talk to them about the struggles she's having as a young mother and as a wife, that they immediately tell her, oh, leave your husband, put your son in daycare, and just go get a job. You be happy. You deserve happiness.
Mm.
And she was frustrated with this because she said, I am happy being a wife. I'm happy being a mom. But my friends don't seem to be able to grasp that there should be anything in life to overcome, that suffering, even in a small way, is part of what it means to be human.
All right. Well, this explains why the divorce rate for the past 20 years in the Bible Belt of America has exceeded the nation as a whole by 50%, and why the divorce rate for the past 25 years in our country, in the church, has virtually equaled that as the nation as a whole. There's no willingness to persist in the face of difficulty. You got to be happy, and be happy right now.
That's exactly it. And I looked over at her when she said that and said, Anna, it sounds like you're fighting for your right to be unhappy. She said, that's it. Where did you get it? Well, I pulled out my smartphone and went to chapter 17 of Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, which, with 1984 is the other totalitarian dystopian novel of the 20th century.
Right.
And in that, the world controller is trying to bring people into the totalitarian movement by telling them, we'll give you Christianity without tears. You can have all the drugs you want, all the sex you want, all the entertainment you want. What's not to love? And the dissident there, he's called John the Savage, he says, I want God. I want sin. I want beauty. I want suffering. And because that's what it means to be human. And the controller says, well, fine, you go have that if that's what you want. This is such a profound message to our world today.
Well, it is. Today, and what you probably don't realize is that Hans Schwab, who is the head of the World Economic Forum, came out and specifically said, sometime in the last couple of weeks, specifically said that we are going to set up a global government, a world government, that yes, you're not going to own anything. He said that. You're not going to own anything, but you're going to be happy. You're going to be happy because we're going to provide all your needs. We're going to provide everything you need. You're going to be happy. You're not even going to have to really work. You're going to be happy. So the Bible says, be ye holy, for I am holy. The new psychologized culture that began in the 1960s says, be ye happy. And now we're neither happy nor holy.
Perfectly said. And this is something that has invaded the church, too. I remember giving a talk once before at an evangelical college, a conservative evangelical college,
yep.
talking about the importance of spiritual discipline and discipleship. A young woman raised her hand and said, sir, I don't understand what you're talking about. Why isn't it enough to love Jesus with all our hearts, like our parents taught us? I told her, that's where we start. But if we're going to hold on to the love of Christ through difficult times, we have to be discipled. She didn't know what I was talking about.
Exactly. And this is the reason why the word obey has become a four-letter word in the church and is the most hated word in the church today.
Exactly. But what I heard from all the Christians I spoke with in the former communist countries is that if you don't have that sort of discipline, and not just the discipline yourself, but within small group communities like the cell churches you were talking about earlier, you're not going to make it. That is so important, to come together in these small groups to prepare and to pray. I dedicate my book, Live Not by Lies, to this Catholic priest, Father Tomislav Kolakovic, who was fighting the Nazis in his native Croatia in 1943 when he got a tip that the Gestapo was coming for him. He fled to Slovakia nearby, his mother's home country, and began teaching in a college there. He told the students, the good news is the Germans are going to lose this war. The bad news is the communists are going to be ruling this country when it's over, and the first thing they're going to do is come after the church. We have to prepare. He began organizing these little groups for prayer and study and discussion of what should we do as Christians. What is our role as Christians in resisting what's coming? The Catholic bishops of that country told him, Father, you're alarming people. It's not going to happen. But Kolakovic had studied the Soviet mindset because he was preparing for missionary work there, and he kept up his work. Chuck, when the Iron Curtain fell over that country and they kicked Kolakovic out, the first thing the communists did was come after the church. Father Kolakovic's network of small groups around that country became the backbone for the underground church and was the only meaningful resistance to communism for the next 40 years.
All right, so when you use the word resistance, and I'm glad you brought it up at this point, because for most people, it takes on a political kind of sense that we're resisting, we're radicals, we're resisting, we're going out there with firearms. That's not the kind of resistance you're talking about, is it?
No, not at all. In fact, in one of the chapters of my book, I talk about what they did in the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia. One thing they did was to gather people for lectures about art and literature. Because what they wanted to do, now these were Christians who organized this, but what they knew that they had to do was to keep alive within the people a memory of what it meant to be not only Christian, but to be part of the West, Western civilization. And this was part of their resistance, you know, to just keep the stories being told. And to this day, the Camilla Bendova, I mentioned her earlier, it was in her apartment in Prague where they had these things. She said that people have got to do this today. She said that one of the things she did for resistance was to read constantly to her kids. She had six kids. She was raising them alone when her husband was in prison, and she worked herself. But she would come home and read to them for at least 2 hours every day. I said, what did you read? She said, I read them the classics, I read the myths, and I read them a lot of Tolkien. I said, why Tolkien? She looked at me straight in the eye and said, Chuck, because we knew that Mordor was real. And I found that so powerful, because it wasn't simply about telling the kids what was wrong with the world and helping them identify the lies in the world and teaching them to resist, but it was also pouring into their moral imaginations a real sense of what is true and beautiful and good.
Well, this is what I've been trying to do with my own grandchildren, and it's tough. It's really tough because they live in this culture just like everybody else. But there's a reason why our universities and colleges have been working triple time over the past 30, 40 years to strip the memory of our country. This is the reason why all of the monuments were being destroyed over the past 6 months, to rid the memory of the West, of the Christian foundations of the West, so that our young people would have no foundation and would be easily taken over by the pursuit of the lies.
You're exactly right. But the good news is, Chuck, we don't have to surrender to this. We often can't take it on fully and head on because they have all the power. But we can build these resistance to it by forming small groups within our churches and within our local communities to tell the truth and to keep this memory alive no matter what.
All right. Now, wait a minute. Somebody might say, well, you know, I can't do that. I don't understand these things like the rest of you guys do. I'm just not able to do that. What do you say to somebody like that?
I would say that the materials that you need are easy to find on the Internet. The classical Christian school movement, for example, is doing a tremendous job of keeping the cultural memory alive for a new generation of the young. And look, people like me, I'm 53 years old. I had never read Dante's Divine Comedy or Homer, the Odyssey, until my kids started going to a classical Christian school, and I began reading it along with them. So it has given me a deeper sense of the debt I owe to the people, the generations that came before me. There are places you can go online to find this information. You just need to look for it.
All right. What do you say to pastors out there?
I would say to pastors to read the book and understand the power of small groups and understand that you have got to lead your people and into being dissidents and into realizing that we're no longer the majority culture here in America. And if we're going to be faithful to the gospel, we have got to be prepared to suffer. And there's so many stories, not just from the early church, but in every generation of Christianity up into our own, of men and women of God suffering and even dying for the sake of the faith. This is not going to be a popular message, Chuck, but it is going to be the only thing that gets us through.
Yeah, absolutely. The book of Revelation chapter 12 tells us they overcame by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and that's where most people stop. But then it says, and who loved not their lives unto death. That's where the suffering aspect comes in. And if people are not willing, are not prepared to suffer, they will capitulate to this soft totalitarianism that's coming in and the mark of the beast. They will.
They will. And if we're called to be martyrs, then so be it. It is a gain to die for Christ. But we need to stop in the churches with the power of positive thinking in our sermons and rather talk about the glory of those who bore the lash for the sake of the Lord. And there are people today, I talk in the book about this one man I spoke to in Russia. His face is partially paralyzed, Alexander Ogorodnikov, from the beatings he took in a Soviet prison. At one point, he was so demoralized, he questioned whether God was really alive. The Lord sent him angels in prison and gave him a vision of the men who were going to be in heaven with the Lord forever because he had witnessed to them there in the prison.
Wow. Powerful. Isn't that great? Rod, you are a blessing, my friend. You are an absolute blessing for such a time as this, and I look forward to further conversations with you right here on Viewpoint. Friends, Rod Dreher, his book, Live Not by Lies, A Manual for Christian Dissidents. You now understand what he's talking about a dissident. It's time for us to pick up the plow and not look back, to take seriously these times. $27 hardback book, yours for only $17. Call us, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Go to our website, saveus.org. Become a partner, friends. These are tough times. Join us. Help us to get the message out. That's another way that you can help us together to be, dare we say it, dissidents in our time. God bless and be a blessing.
Listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Christmeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.